finding a home and staying there.
I finally decided I can't go live with other older people.
Aging in place, plus getting young people back to nature. I'm Susan Barnett, and this is 51% The Women's Perspective. According to an AARP study, more than 90% of seniors prefer to stay in their own homes as they grow older. But that presents challenges, with the number one issue for many city residents being the high cost of staying put. The Housing is a Human Rights Storytelling Project is an attempt to collect the voices of people struggling to stay home, whether they're young or old. But this particular group of interviews features seniors living in New York City.
I walk into various agencies, and I've been told that as soon as I open my mouth, it's apparent that I'm an educated woman. People will say, "You? Are you really? You know, well, yeah, I am." I am collecting Social Security, but I have been on disability for a painful arthritic condition. I just got a hospital bill for $100. And so I asked the insurance company, you know, what's going on, because I'm supposed to have very low copays. And they just sent me a letter. I picked it up on the way out of the building to come here. And the letter says, if you will look at page 80 in your handbook. I think they heard me scream when I read page 80. So there are these bills, you know, oh, sure, I can pay that $100. But if I had known it, I wouldn't have done this x-ray, because I knew this was one of those things that could have been postponed. And yes, every month somebody might say, you can afford this, can't you? But I say no 100 times every month. Yes, and yes, there's one thing I could afford, but, you know, you have to live within a budget. So this is the source of the desperation. It is the money. And one of the ways I make ends meet is by having roommates. And it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. And I've done a lot of hard things in my life. But living with a stranger, an often young person who sees me in loco parentis, so they don't see that we're both giving up an awful lot to share a space. They just don't want to give up anything when they move in. You know, and I had the best roommate I ever had. He was cheerful, energetic, very bright, working Wall Street, not a high-paying job at the time. I'm sure he made it. But he never bathed. I mean, never. So soon after he moved in, all of the place just smelled. I could smell before I opened the door. Then the electrician was putting in new outlets, and including in my apartment, and I went into that room to look at what the electrician did. I moved a little file cabinet. Something spilled. So I opened the drawer. I'm not by nature a nosy person. I've had an interesting life of my own when I was living, So what can people do? That shocked me, not much. So I opened the drawer. This man that I like so much was holding his urine in bottles. So I had to ask him to leave, because not only was the smell, but it was part of the smell, I think, you know, but not the only part of it, because he did not bathe and he didn't wash his clothes often. Yeah, so that's the sort of thing, the unpredictable. Now, as far as talk about anxiety and uncertainty, I am on a list for a senior housing. Through NYCHA, I applied for NYCHA, New York City Housing Authority. It's called The Projects. And actually, they have very nice living spaces. So, but after you get through that one screening process, which I did, and I went for the interviews, the computer spit me out and said, okay, my name will be put on a list for senior housing. And that's where it's going to stay. And nobody knows. Nobody can tell me, you know, what I should plan or what I shouldn't plan.
I am here for 20 years.
And
I'm 72 years.
Old.
72 years old. And this is my husband. 47 years to the same husband.
This lady here is my wife. I've been married to her for 47 years. I am 72 years of age.
When I first moved in, I paid $700 a month. And we were living upstairs. So we had two big bedrooms.
Bedroom on the third floor.
And one small bedroom, like 2.5. It used to hold 2 living rooms set. And over there was the big, big, big kitchen. But as the house was sold, the landlord told me, he's a new landlord, he asked us to move because he wanted to repair the place, just transfer from one floor to the next. I thought he was talking the truth, so I tried to help. Move up things, move down things. The bed was brought down, and when we were down here, maybe 2 months, called me on the phone. I want one of the rooms. I said, which room? Upstairs. His friend got in fire and he have nowhere to stay. I said, take one from your place. He said, I don't have no space here. All over full. I said, you have so many tenants? He said, oh yes, all over full. And when your buddy is in trouble, you have to help them. I said, but you're not helping me. You told me just a few things we had to move down here. And I have things upstairs. The living room had things. Something tell me, go upstairs because you still have your things up there. I say, well, go upstairs and see what's going on. You don't know what you could do up there. When I went, everything, bedroom, everything. Living room, everything.
All our back clothes, in the kitchen, packing everything. Anyhow, the clothes,
sorry, it just tumbled them. And it gave me the greatest shock.
Everything was packed in the kitchen.
Not even shock, but like collapsing, fear, angry.
Because he moved all of stuff from the living room and put packet in the kitchen. Things was from the floor, nearly reaching the roof.
Hey, calm down. Don't say no more. Your pressure will go up. Yes, it was a mess. He just moved them across and take what he wanted for himself, that landlord. He put some in the basement and he put the rest in the kitchen and some he threw away some. Some got broken. And then he put them anyhow he feel like putting them. Because
he threw away the couch.
To keep me occupied. You understand what I mean? That he could plan how to rent his place.
The landlord wants us to go. For him to renovate here and rent it out in rooms as he's doing upstairs and make more money than what he will get from us for the month.
And he never repaired my way. That was a trick and a lie. He did not do it. And what he started, he ripped the cupboard from there. He ripped the one from there.
Sure, we are there, he ripped it out.
Yes,
he,
a long time.
He took out the sink. So we have no sink.
The sink was there.
No cupboard, all utensils on the floor, food stuff on the floor. Look, we seasoning everything
right
on the floor. And this is the kind of life the man have.
With this whole day, see how long we in this torture?
Inside this.
No sink in the kitchen.
Over 2 years.
Yes. So, and I don't know if you listened just now, if you heard water running just now. That's
when they
the sewer.
It leaks.
That's the sewer.
Some fall down here and the rest go down in the basement.
I didn't know there was a sewer pipe there. But he burst the hole for me to know now.
And they cut it and
they put a hole in the sewer pipe and run the PVC they call it.
To make a bathroom and a toilet upstairs. And from the very day he did that, water started to leak.
And the wall is saturated with water.
And it have electric wire running right there.
Last week Friday I was feeling very, very sick. I don't know. Smell was not agreeing with me.
It smelled bad.
Last night it was bad.
Coming down,
like when you pass by some place where people using the sidewalk, or when you go in some public urinal, you're glad to run out, you can't stand it. This is how that was smelling yesterday and last night. I wish I can see a doctor now and let me know what is going on inside of me. because I don't think it's nice.
Look at the state we're in there. We cannot pack nothing.
I don't know where I will go, if or when they evict me.
Stress, what the man is doing me here. Stress is what sent me to the hospital. And I was told in the hospital my pressure is very high and my heart is beating very fast. So I have to stay in the hospital for treatment. I asked them to discharge me. They didn't want to do it. I told them I had to go. As I'm facing eviction, my wife alone outside there. That's all for now, okay?
Fearing retaliation, these senior citizens asked that we not disclose their identities. My name is Michael Primo. Along with Rachel Falcone, I am creator and co-producer of the Housing is a Human Rights Storytelling Project. The project creates a space for people to share first-person stories about their struggle for home. More information, including how to participate, can be found online at housingisahumanright.org or by calling us toll-free at 888-955-6653. That's 888-955-6653.
Coming up, getting around when you're no longer able to drive and helping students rediscover nature. If you missed part of this show or want to share it, visit the 51% Archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1288. Take a quick look around while on any mass transit system and you'll notice that a lot of the passengers are seniors. Where mass transit is available, it bridges the gap left when they're no longer able to drive. But not all seniors are that comfortable navigating the system. So in California, at ages 70, 80, even 90, Molly Samuel reports some seniors are going back to school.
Fran Chan rides the bus just about every day. She lives on Geary Street in San Francisco. The 38 is a busy line, and in Chan's neighborhood, there are lots of seniors who use it. But we get a seat right up front.
It never failed. I used to feel hurt, but now I
don't. Because they thought you needed it?
No, or that I look that old. Old age is funny. It creeps up on you. You don't know. All of a sudden, you look in the mirror, and my God, you're old.
Chan is 89. She gave up driving about 3 years ago. She was worried about getting in an accident. And though there are some places she doesn't get to anymore, she says she doesn't have many complaints about Muni. Chan's independent. She can step outside her apartment and take the bus wherever she needs to go.
Monday, I go down to Clear for a discussion group and a drama group where you do drama reading. And then Tuesday, I go to a music appreciation group. And Wednesday,
for now at least, she has no plans to move.
Old people have to decide whether you're going to stay alone or move into group housing. And you vacillate. But I finally decide I can't go live with other older people.
The Metropolitan Transportation Commission, which oversees the regional Clipper transit card, counted nearly 1.5 million rides by seniors just in August. And not everyone uses a Clipper card. Fran Chan feels pretty comfortable using San Francisco's buses, but not all seniors are so savvy. For them, there's senior survival school.
Hello, so my name's Matt. I'm with Muni, the Friendly Neighborhood Bus Company. And
Senior Survival School is a free program run by a San Francisco advocacy organization called Planning for Elders. They hold workshops on the challenges of navigating city living in senior centers around San Francisco. Today, they brought in Matt West, who's in charge of making sure Muni works for older people.
All of our buses are accessible. They have a lift and a kneeler, Our streetcars do have the little platforms that you can access from various locations.
About a dozen seniors have gathered at the San Francisco Senior Center in the Tenderloin, some of them using canes or walkers. They're taking notes, having snacks, and asking questions.
Yes, sir.
Would paratransit take you to a 49ers game?
Paratransit will take you to a 49ers game.
That's because I have had situations where the three front seats on both sides are full of very distinctly elderly people, and beyond the three seats, people will not give up.
Yes. So the actual law, and this is the bind that we kind of in, because you're sort of trying to legislate people being polite, which is a pain in the butt. But
I was wondering, has Minnie started to work on the future? Because I was on a bus last week, and I've been on others where seniors are getting up for other seniors who are in worse condition, mm-hmm. like they have a cane or a walker. Mm-hmm. So I've seen buses where maybe at least three-fourths of the people on the bus were seniors, and some of them had to stand. Have you started to work maybe on how are you going to solve that future?
The way that we would most likely address that is when we purchase the new buses.
Since the number of seniors riding Muni is only going to go up, city planners are looking at some long-term ideas as well as short-term fixes, like creating smaller community routes that serve particular neighborhoods. But tight budgets mean there are trade-offs.
A lot of the issues that we see coming up are recently the cuts in services. Last year there was a 10% cut in the lines.
Sarah Jarman is the director of Senior Survival School. She says the elimination of stops is one of the biggest problems seniors face, but it's also not the only one. For one thing, it can be scary to get on a bus. Jarman says many seniors are afraid of falling.
People get pushed around a lot on the bus. They're not seated before they take off.
Jarman's colleague James Chiancini says another problem is that buses don't always stop.
It happens all the time. I've seen them pass people up, you know. And a crowded bus is going to be a missed bus for someone in a wheelchair.
Seniors in the East Bay face many of the same challenges as their San Francisco peers. Cuts in service, for instance, are an ongoing issue. But there are also some more fundamental challenges. For one thing, the East Bay's bigger. San Francisco's Muni has about 5,000 stops, and AC Transit in the East Bay has about 6,000. But Muni only has to serve about 47 square miles, while AC Transit covers over 360 square miles. In short, similar number of stops, but AC Transit's much more spread out. Jackie Rocket grew up riding public transportation in Oakland.
When I was a kid, we used to get on a small bus on 35th Avenue. I took it down to what is now MacArthur, used to be Hopkins. I would get on the trolley or a streetcar and they go to work.
Now she lives in Fremont and she drives just about everywhere.
But practically speaking, if the time comes that I no longer can safely use my car, then I'll have to give up driving.
To prepare for that day, she's attending transit training, a course similar to Senior Survival School, sponsored by the city of Fremont. Unlike the seniors in the San Francisco class, who are for the most part familiar with Muni, most students in this class don't ride the bus that often. In this more suburban, car-friendly city, they still drive. So a big part of what they're learning is just the basics of how to navigate BART and AC Transit. Rocket, along with the other seniors participating in the class, has very specific reasons for being here.
Well, seniors need to know these things. When you sit down, when it says you're retired and you sit down at home, your muscles atrophy, your heart goes to pee, and you die. So, by going and doing as much as you possibly can, it helps you keep getting younger.
But her route isn't as easy as Fran Chan's in San Francisco. While she's happy to ride AC Transit, the closest stop to her house isn't close enough.
And where I would have to go would be one, two, three blocks. Long blocks, not short ones, before I got to a bus stop. And that would be impossible for me.
Transportation for America, a national advocacy group, projects that by 2015, 65,000 seniors in Oakland won't have adequate access to public transit. In San Francisco, it's 34,000. And that's just those two cities. As James Chiancini from Planning for Elders points out, economics and politics aside, one thing's for sure.
The old folks are coming right now, so get ready, you know what I mean? Because they'll run you down if you're not, you know, prepared.
For Cross Currents, I'm Molly Samuel.
Think about when you were a kid and how much time you spent playing outside. Now, think about the children you know and how much time you see them exploring their neighborhoods. Times have changed, and time outside for today's kids is way down. But there are programs that are working to fight what's been called nature deficit disorder. Michigan's State of Opportunity Project, Sarah Hewlett, looks at one of them.
This group of sixth graders at C.A. Frost Environmental Sciences Academy in Grand Rapids starts class the way most students everywhere do, inside at tables, looking at photocopied sheets of paper and taking direction from their science teacher, Mary Lewandowski.
All right, so raise your hand when you're ready to go out and you can tell me what you got to do.
But once they've got their assignments, they head out the door to a retention pond out back where they've got to figure out where they are.
If this was south, then this was east.
Then they fan out around the pond to complete their assignments. Actually, some of them are in the pond.
We're measuring the temperature of the water.
We got to get the bugs out. And
yeah, we have to check.
We have to feel it.
In some ways, this school is special. It sits right next to a nature preserve, so teachers can take kids on hikes that feel like they're far from the city, when in fact they're not. But in other ways, it's just an ordinary urban public school. Kids don't have to test to get in. Close to two-thirds of students get free or reduced lunch. And the fact that this school is open to any student in Grand Rapids is important to Pam Wells Marcus.
Hi, good to see you.
Wells is retired now, sort of. She was the principal here for 18 years and still spends a lot of time here. She can't walk 3 feet without a student coming up to her for a hug or to show her a scraped knee. Wells says when she and her colleagues decided to make this an environment-themed school about a decade ago, they wanted it to be a refuge of sorts.
What this school provides to children is a place where they can breathe, where they can notice and observe, where they can be still.
Wells says that's a need all kids have, but she says it's especially true in poor urban neighborhoods.
It's not safe to go for walks. It's not safe to go around the block. It's not maybe safe to play in parks and to go in fields and to hang around.
And when kids don't get to spend time in nature, well, studies suggest a link to things like obesity, attention problems, even depression. And on the flip side, there's research that shows something else.
Which is you can be happier and healthier and maybe even smarter if you get outside into nature more.
That's Richard Louvre. He came up with the term nature deficit disorder and wrote about it in his 2005 book, Last Child in the Woods. Louvre says schools have helped contribute to the problem.
Many schools have canceled or eliminated recess. Physical education has been cut. Field trips in many schools are a thing of the past. So there's a long list of barriers.
Back at C.A. Frost Elementary in Grand Rapids, teacher Greg Peterson is wrangling a bunch of third graders on a trail in back of the school.
First, wait. Double line right here.
There's a freewheeling element to this kind of teaching. Peterson's got to get these kids to learn what the curriculum says they need to know and what they'll be tested on.
Tell me, what do these leaves do? Rebecca, can you talk loud so we can hear?
But nature keeps getting in the way.
Hey, friends, look at this special kind of hawk. It's called a Cooper's hawk. I can't believe this view we're getting. Look at this.
The school seems to be doing something right. C.A. Frost outperformed the district on the state standardized test in most grades and subjects by a wide margin. And the school may be setting these kids up for a love of the outdoors they can take with them for the rest of their lives. With State of Opportunity, I'm Sarah Hewlett, Michigan Radio News.
Follow me into the woods, walk where I walk, and keep looking around.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at wamc.org. You can also email me at sbarnett@wamc.org. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.